Deborah then went on to ask Professor McLaren whether patients with macular degeneration might benefit from the subretinal implants he's been trialling.
How about patients with macular degeneration? You didn't seem to mention them.
Well, the patients with macular degeneration may well benefit from this technology in future because they, in principle, have a very similar problem in that they lose the light-sensing photoreceptor cells, but the rest of the retina remains intact. But as I'm sure you're aware, the difference of macular degeneration is that patients still have reasonably good peripheral vision. In fact, the peripheral vision is not really affected at all in macular degeneration. So we have a sort of bit of a trade-off. We want, at some point, to develop an electronic technology for patients with macular degeneration. But at the moment, in doing this trial, we really need to have patients who've got no vision or very, very little, if any, light perception at the beginning, so that anything we measure, we know, has come up from a zero baseline, must be due to the implant. With a patient with macular degeneration, it'd be very difficult to know whether somehow one stimulated a bit of the retina that was still working and they actually had a little bit more vision than they had before, whether perhaps they could use their peripheral vision a little bit more effectively. It'd be very, very difficult. And also, the other point, of course, is that the trial does have some risks to the eye. The surgery is complicated. There could be some damage to the retina. And a patient who has some vision could lose that vision as a result of being in the study. Whereas a patient who has no vision at all, even if there was a complication inside the eye, they wouldn't really be worse off, certainly not from the sight perspective. So for the time being, certainly for this initial study, we're not including patients with macular degeneration, both because we wouldn't be sure if the vision responses they had were wholly due to the implant, and also potentially they might have a little bit to lose if things didn't go as planned.
Are you concerned about how long ago the patient has lost their vision?
That isn't really a concern, actually. In fact, some of the best results actually have been in patients who've lost vision for a long time. What we have said in our trial is that we want patients who have had a good level of vision at some point in their life. And the reason for that is, you know, if we take patients who have been able to read before and have then lost their vision, we can then assess their ability to read as something that is bringing back the sight that they had before. If we have a patient who has been blind from birth, they wouldn't be suitable for our trial because we have no idea if the brain connections and if all the other bits that go to seeing it are actually there in the first place. So I'm not saying these patients wouldn't be suitable at some point for another trial, but for this very early phase study, we need to be sure that patients are able to read things that they could have read them before to get the best results from the implant. And so that is important. But now how long they've lost sight is again another matter. We're looking for patients who are relatively young, and by relatively young I say, you know, under the age of 78 at the time of surgery, which is, you know, I suppose that's young in our terms. The reality is that most patients who've got no light perception will have been blind for several years, some of them more than a decade or two decades. As long as they have this optic nerve function measurable on the electrical test, it's not a bar to entry no matter when the sight was lost.
If they find the implant helpful, can it be left in the eye?
Yes, well, we're actually intending on leaving the implant in for as long as necessary, in fact, indefinitely, if it's working. And the initial studies were basically to identify whether or not the implant would work, because it was never known. Someone is blind, you put an electrical implant underneath the retina and stimulate it. Can they see? A very simple question. We always thought that that might be the case because we noted in clinical observations that the nerves were intact and the pupil responses when you shine a light in the eye, when the pupil constricts, this was intact. But we never really knew for sure until this initial study was published by Eberhard Jrenner's group in 2010. And since then, obviously we can now go on to the next step, which is if you can stimulate the retina and someone can see who's blind, how can you make that a permanent device? And the trial that we're doing in collaboration with retina implant is to look at the long-term survival of a self-powered retinal device in which the retinal device and the power supply are all kept permanently embedded under the skin. And we will be monitoring the patients in our study for a year after surgery. And during that time, we'll be asking them questions about tuning and adjusting, because things we don't really know is what's the optimal frequency, what's the optimal voltage, all these things which we'll find from the trial. So if, however, the device is still working at the end of a year, then obviously we'll be delighted to continue maintaining it and to make sure that the patients continue to get use out of it. And that will mean regular servicing, changing the batteries and things like that.
And the components are reliable over a long period of time, you expect?
Well, that's, again, something we don't know. The power supply part is essentially the same power supply as is used in cochlear implant technology, mm-hmm. which is implanted into children at a very young age, under the age of 1 year old now, and can last for decades. So that part of it we do have some experience of. The actual implant itself is something we don't know. And again, that's one of the questions we'll be asking about the trial. The implant has been designed and coated with various chemicals and protectants to stop it from undergoing corrosion. But the eye is quite a saline-enriched environment with lots of ions and things. You've got an electrical charge there. You know, it is an area where corrosion is a possibility, and these sorts of things which we don't know. There's also the other side, not the electronics part, but the eye, the body's tissues, the healing response. It may, for instance, happen that after a while there might be some scarring around the implant and the results may be less as time goes by. Again, we don't really know the answers to these questions. We can find these answers out by doing this study, that's for sure. And one of the nice things about the retinal implant design is that it can actually be taken out of the eye. So it can be slid out. It actually goes underneath the retina. Mm-hmm. So the ribbon can be sort of gently slid out of the eye and then taken away. And the eye could perhaps be used for other technologies as they become developed in future years.
Do you see problems in the future developing this as technical problems or surgical problems?
For me, the surgical problems are all fairly soluble. In other words, they're using techniques that we've already established in vitreoretinal surgery. The thing that we don't have really much understanding of is the body's reaction to having devices implanted long term. So I think about what we've done so far in the eye. Obviously in cataract surgery we use implants all the time, but think about an electronic device. The closest that would be something like a pacemaker, where patients have it implanted for a long period of time. So if we assume that the eye can tolerate an electronic device for a long period of time, then the electronic side of things is what would need to be developed. And, you know, I think we would all agree that one thing you can't predict is that electronics technology will not improve as years go by, as we understand more and more about it, particularly making devices smaller, having more electronics and more software incorporated in a device, having less power supply, these sorts of things, more reliable. You know, I think we're looking at the very beginning of something that will become much more user-friendly and much more effective in the future. You know, but this really is the point of entry at the moment.
If you had a wish list for a future device, what would you hope could be developed?
Well, that's a very interesting question. So what I would like is a device definitely where patients who are blind have an appreciation that their life is somehow different because of what they can see with the device. Okay, so in other words, the vision that it yields must be of practical value. And to do that, I think the device would need to have a larger field of vision so they can walk around with it. The power supply should be reliable and relatively easy to use. In other words, there shouldn't be a requirement to carry around a large battery pack or to replace the batteries regularly. And in fact, the current device has actually made significant improvements in that regard. And the patients, you know, what we've seen so far is that patients learn to use the implant more as time goes by. So initially, one of the patients described, for instance, when reading the letter L, he could see the vertical and the horizontal bar of the letter L moving around, but they weren't connected. It was only after a while when he realized that the two were together that his brain suddenly connected them, and then they appeared as a normal letter L. And you know, if you think about it, what the brain is doing is it's going through that process again of visual development. It's learning to see things again and work out what they are. So the ideal device, in my mind, would have something within it so that the brain is able to sort of learn to use it, and the patients who use the device more and more becomes more and more effective as they use it for longer and longer and longer, because the brain, you know, the learning process is very important. So the device would need to be fairly stable within the eye for a relatively long period of time to allow patients to use and get more out of it as time goes by.
Do you only want patients who have profound loss of vision in both eyes, or would you consider a patient who had lost vision in one eye?
Well, we would much prefer patients who have loss of vision in both eyes. And the reason for that is for several reasons, actually. The first reason is that The surgery is quite a complicated operation which can take up to 8 hours. Now, I wouldn't really feel comfortable subjecting someone to that if they had a perfectly good vision out of the other eye, because clearly they're not going to get much benefit out of it in terms of anything that they do every day. Also, we can never really be sure how the brain learns to use the implant. And you can imagine that someone who's got very good vision in one eye, you know, the brain is not really going to be too impressed with the vision coming out of the implant. They're not going to have that same sort of learning phase which we're hoping to get. And I think, you know, just in purely in practical terms, you know, we have a lot of patients who are blind in both eyes, and perhaps we should really be prioritising them for the trial, at least to begin with.
Thank you, Deborah and Robert. Details of further reading on this subject can be found with your CD and on the OQ webpage and Docket app.